Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
15th hour about to be underway. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us. I hope you're all going to have fantastic weekends. We're about to head down to Dallas. Talk to Mike Coppinger about this upcoming Canelo fight and the fact that there could be as many as 70,000 fans present for this event. Biggest crowd indoors by far since everything started to shut down last year. In March, we already have 15,000 people who showed up for UFC 261 in Jacksonville indoors. It's now been over a month since the Texas Rangers started playing home baseball games, full crowds outside of the Dallas area. Zero issues with COVID as a result of these sporting events. And so to me, it's pretty straightforward and clear. If you look at the data, every different sporting event out there, especially the ones that are outdoors, should be back to 100% capacity at this point in time. Let anyone who wants to go be able to go. A place that is not at 100% capacity is the Staples Center in LA. For those of you waking up with us on the West Coast, is it time for Laker fans to push the panic button, Danny G? Looks like, I don't even know hardly how this play-in series universe works, but it looks like the Lakers are likely to be in it. And Adam Silver is going to be so nervous if LeBron James and the Lakers are potentially eliminated before the true playoffs even begin.
Yeah, well, it's not looking good at the moment because LeBron can't get back on the court. He's never had an injury like a really bad high ankle sprain before. And from his comments recently, you see that he's not handling it well. It's a frustrating type injury when you're not used to something like that. He tried to get back on the court and it didn't work out. Same goes for AD now, who just, Twitter blew up last night with all the glass comments. He's made out of glass.
Yeah, right.
All the memes of him in a wheelchair and things like that. And that's been the MO for AD all season long, is he can't stay healthy on the court without those two. And it's sad because as a Dodgers fan, we're going through the same thing with injuries.
Where you poor guys having to deal with just a few months ago winning your World Series. I don't know how you do it.
Well, look, I am not spoiled as a sports fan because we waited almost a decade for the Lakers to get back on track and over three decades for the Dodgers to do really well in the postseason. I'm not crying. I'm not one of those fans like boo-hooing because I appreciate the fact that we did have two championships to at least celebrate during a pandemic. But it is not looking good for the Lakers right now. The only thing I can think is if LeBron can come back and make a huge push in that play-in game, then maybe the team can get it together in the first round of the playoffs.
Well, right now they're the 60, so they're holding on to that 60.
They are.
But yeah.
But if they, I believe they play against, is
Portland,
it the Trailblazers
tonight.
Is it tonight?
Yeah.
So if the Trailblazers won this game, they would knock the Lakers down to 7, right?
Yeah. And they're down to an 8.7% chance to win the NBA title, which is fifth best.
Yeah.
You know, it feels bad because of the way the season started out so well, and that's where I was trying to draw the parallel to the Dodgers.
Yeah, but it's not surprising.
13-2 out the gate, and then all the injuries happen, you catch bad breaks, and suddenly, this is not how the season started.
It's not surprising because when LeBron and AD both went down at the same time, I figured there would be some sort of spot like this right now. I think they'll hold on to the 6 seed, and if they don't, I think they'll still be the 8 seed when it comes down to it.
By the way, the Nets are a big favorite. I'm looking at the live FanDuel odds. The Nets are now 2-1, even though they've lost several games in a row. The NBA regular season really is totally worthless. It's why we almost never mention it on this show. The Lakers are now up to plus 440, which is this is to win the title. Then the Clippers are at 6-1, the Jazz 6.5-1, the Bucks 7.5-1, and then you've got the 76ers at 12-1, the Phoenix Suns at 16-1, Nuggets 36-1, and the Dallas Mavericks 42-1. And it's basically a dead heat now in terms of who's favored to win the NBA's Western Conference. The Lakers or the Clippers are nearly dead even. So wanted to mention that. I haven't even dove into the playoff play-in series in general to know exactly how that all breaks down. But I would tell you this. Adam Silver is losing some sleep because nobody's watching the NBA now. And if LeBron James and the Lakers ended up somehow getting eliminated in the play-in series before the NBA playoffs even began, the NBA playoffs would be done for in terms of anybody watching them at all. It's basically LeBron's league or else.
Yeah, that play-in tournament is kind of dumb. The seed 7 to 10 will form a bracket where there will be three games total. First, the 7 through 8 seeds will play each other to decide who will be the 7th seed. The loser of that game plays the winner of the 9th-10 game to determine who will be the 8th seed. So it's dumb.
I'm still confused.
Yeah, but then you would 7 would play 10, I'm assuming,
right.
And 8 would
yes.
play 9.
Yes.
And then you have to win – the lower-seeded team has to win 2 out of 3. Is that the way that series works?
Yeah.
I mean, but the higher-seeded team, do they also have to win 2 out of 3?
I think we should just do paper, rock, scissors.
I don't even know the answer on how this exact playoff scenario is going to play out. Like, even the fact that we don't know what seed they are, I think the higher seeded team only has to win one game, if I'm not mistaken. And the lower seeded team would have to win two. But I bet the vast majority out there of you listening to me right now also don't have any clue what the rules are exactly in this scenario. So let's go ahead and we'll call Mike. In the meantime, I told you I was going to play this audio as well. Nick Saban, there's a little bit of feuding going on right now between Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher. Jimbo Fisher, speaking to a bunch of Texas A&M Aggie boosters, said at some point the Aggies were going to beat Texas A&M's ass. And Nick Saban was asked about that, and here's what he said.
Coach, got to ask, your friend Jimbo said yesterday that at some point while you're in Tuscaloosa, he was going to beat your butt. That wasn't the word that he used, but did you have any response for that?
In golf?
I think he meant on the football field.
Well, I'm sure there'll come a day, you know, but is that what he's talking about?
Yeah,
football?
He was talking about football.
Oh, he was? Wow. It used to be on my noontime basketball league, I guess. You know, we're no longer partners, you know, when it comes to that.
Coach.
Now, they have a really good team, really good program, and, you know, they're getting better and better all the time. And there's a lot of challenges in the SEC, and they're certainly one of the up-and-coming programs. And he's always been a great coach, did a great job for us when he was with us, and he's had a great career as a head coach. So, you know, it's going to be a challenge for us, no doubt, when we have to play him.
At golf is one of the all-time great lines responding there. Nick Saban asked about Jimbo Fisher kicking his ass in golf was a great line. And I still think there's a lot of stories that can be told about these legendary noon basketball games that Nick Saban would have with all of his former assistant coaches. They'd play every day at noon and draft up teams and play pretty intense coach basketball league games for the football squads. Pretty awesome. Let's go down to Dallas, Texas, where we are getting ready. Speaking of Texas A&M Aggies, we're getting ready for Canelo to fight a big monster bout in terms of crowd. Over 70,000 people expected there. Mike Coppinger joins us. He's at Mike Coppinger. He covers the fight game and does a really good job of it. Mike, what's it going to feel like to you to walk into the Cowboys Stadium and see 70,000 people there this weekend as expectations appear to be that that's the crowd size?
Yeah, it's going to be great. You know, it's been a long time coming, and this is going to be the biggest audience for a sporting event in the U.S. by far since the pandemic started. So I know a lot of people are complaining about it, but it's happening, and I think it's going to be great.
What's the expectation for this fight? I mean, Canelo is a monster favorite. Is the storyline going to be the crowd size or the boxing match itself?
I think it is a really great boxing match, too. I know Canelo is a big favorite just because of how good he is. He's the best fighter in the world. But Billy Joe Saunders is a great fighter, too, and I think he's a live dog. Tyson Fury is his best friend, the heavyweight champion. He's been here all week, whipping everyone into a frenzy. I think it's going to be a good stylistic matchup. But, yeah, the crowd, too, is a big deal.
What's the expectation, by the way, with Tyson Fury? It feels like forever ago now that he had that fight against Deontay Wilder. When is Fury fighting again?
Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua are pretty close to getting a deal done, which I think would be by far the biggest fight in boxing, and that could take place August 14th in Saudi Arabia with a site fee of over $150 million. And I think the fight could be announced as soon as tomorrow.
Oh, wow. So so Saudi Arabia, August 14th with Fury against Joshua. How much interest do you think that brings in the United States? Obviously, both foreign fighters, but both of them have pretty decent names. You think that would be a massively bought and paid attention to fight in the U.S. among boxing fans?
Yeah, absolutely. Like you mentioned, it is rare that a fight will be that big in the U.S. with two Brits, but this is the biggest fight in the heavyweight division since Tyson Lewis in 2002. Two undefeated, or actually not undefeated, but the two best heavyweights in the world, two big punchers, and two great personalities, especially Tyson Fury. I think it does over a million pay-per-view buys.
Wow, we're talking with Mike Coppinger, does great work covering boxing. By the way, did you see, what's the vibe among media who cover boxing with the Mayweather fight against Logan Paul? I think it's down in Miami. They had the grab the hat situation between Logan Paul and Mayweather, which got some attention, probably made both fighters a little bit more money, because I don't think I would have mentioned the boxing match at all if that hadn't happened. What are most people in your industry saying about that fight?
I mean, most people think it's a joke and a circus, but you got to give it to Floyd Mayweather. He always finds a way to steal the spotlight and attention from whatever else is going on that week, and he's done it again with a real legitimate big fight happening here in Dallas. But, yeah, if you talk to most boxing people, they don't take it seriously. To be clear, it is an exhibition, and it's crazy that I see people saying, oh, well, Logan Paul is bigger than Mayweather. Who knows? No, we do know.
It should be a Mayweather. It's going to be hard for him to get a glove on him, I think. What does Mayweather do at this point? I mean, do you buy into the fact that he's retired from a legitimate competition, or do you think he'll get drawn back into another boxing match at some point in time?
I mean, Floyd Mayweather's 44 now, and that 50-0 record's really important to him. I don't see him getting roped into a real boxing match as long as he can keep making a big pile of money for these exhibitions that don't even count against his record. I mean, this Logan Paul fight, I think he could easily make way over $50 million.
That's crazy,
maybe
huh?
More. It's crazy because, like you said, it's not even a sanctioned fight. It's an exhibition. And if you watched the Mike Tyson-Roy Jones exhibition back in November, you see like what it is. These guys are not trying to like really hurt each other. I think it's more WWE than anything else.
What, by the way, you were mentioning the idea of Tyson Fury and Joshua in Saudi Arabia. What would those fighters stand to make off that fight?
Oh, wow. I mean, that site fee, I've been told, is probably going to be over $150 million just to bring the fight to Saudi. I think they could easily both make well over $100 million.
I mean, that's amazing,
that's
right?
Pay-per-view.
Because
yeah,
people will say boxing is dead, but when you think about each of those fighters making $100 million for that fight, I mean, that's pretty unbelievable, isn't it?
I mean, boxing is still the sport where you're going to make the most amount of money if you're in that 1%. It's an event-driven sport, and yeah, UFC's pass boxing on a weekly basis, but I think when it comes to the big, big events, whether it's Canelo Saunders or to a bigger degree, a Fury Joshua, I think nothing tops it.
Mike, enjoy the crowd. Do you expect a sellout? What do you expect it to look like?
Clay, I think it's definitely going to be a sellout. It's going to be over 70,000, and I think it's going to be wall-to-wall people here at AT&T Stadium.
Mike, I appreciate you getting up early with us. I'm going to be watching that fight. We need to get you on again sometime soon. Appreciate it, my man.
All right, thanks, Clay. Catch you later.
Yeah, no doubt. That is Mike Coppinger, who is down there. Does great work covering the fight. How about that? Joshua going up against Fury and both guys potentially making $100 million for that fight. I mean, good for them. By the way, up next, Senator Josh Hawley from Missouri will join us. And I just happened to hop onto Twitter and I saw him tweet, getting ready to talk with the most interesting sports journalist in America, Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio. Tune in. Well, that's a heck of a tease.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Missouri Senator Josh Hawley, who has got a brand new book out. I have got it here at my house. I have begun to read it. It is fantastic. Senator, I appreciate you coming on with us right out of the gate. What'd you think of your Kansas City Chiefs draft? You kind of remade the offensive line a little bit. Are you optimistic that Mahomes is going to take a few less hits?
Yeah, you know, I really am optimistic. I thought they had a great draft, Clay. Thanks for having me on, by the way. And you know, you look at what they did with going to the defense, linebacker, then center, tight end, getting another guard or tackle there with Trey Smith. So I think that it was very, very productive. Seems like, you know, some good solid hits there, to mix in a baseball metaphor.
Yeah.
So I think it's good. I'm excited.
What do you think, by the way? The Aaron Rodgers talk has been huge. There's been, and I'm one of the guys who thinks that he's going to end up with the Broncos, which could mean we'd get Aaron Rodgers versus Patrick Mahomes twice a year. As a guy who watches a lot of, Kansas City Chiefs games, we know that Justin Herbert's on the upswing. I feel bad for Raider fans. It doesn't seem like anything ever goes their way. But what do you think about the Aaron Rodgers drama? Do you ever get kind of drawn into that to escape some of what you deal with on a day-to-day basis and just sit back and think, hey, I wonder what Aaron Rodgers is going to do with Green Bay?
Yeah, I have been following it, to tell you the truth, because I followed Rodgers his whole career. He's just a few years younger than I am. And, I'm definitely interested and intrigued by this possibility if I'm going to the Broncos. I kind of love it. I mean, because I would just love to see Mahomes match up against him. Of course, you know, I mean, Mahomes is my guy, so I think we'd get the better of that matchup. But it would be phenomenal, phenomenal football. And for two greats, you know, I mean, Rodgers is a great quarterback. Mahomes, I think, is going to be the greatest of all time when all is said and done. He's got a long career ahead of him. But, I'd kind of love to see that matchup.
You're around the same age as me. Later today on Fox Bet Live, the television show that I do, we're doing a little bit of a throwback segment in honor of the NASCAR event that's going on at Darlington. And they asked us to pick our, like, basically childhood, one of our favorite players to wear a throwback jersey from the 80s or the 90s. And I bet you are going to be in some way at least a big fan of the guy that I picked, but I'm curious who you would pick from your youth if you had to go back and pick a jersey. But who I picked and the jersey that I picked Bo Jackson, the baby blue Kansas City Royal, like old school for people who remember the 1980s, Bo Jackson number 16, baby blue with like the dark blue rim. I mean, I think that's one of the all-time classic jerseys back in the day. So I'm going to wear that for a couple of segments on TV today. Bo Jackson, for when I was growing up, was, with Jordan, probably my two favorite athletes. I had I've talked about this, the Bo Jackson poster where he's got the shoulder pads on, but he's also got the baseball bat that he's got over his shoulders. You grew up in the state of Missouri. Who would you go with if you had to go throwback like 80s or 90s?
Well, you've taken away my originality here, because as you were introducing this, I was thinking to myself, I'd go Bo Jackson because that's who I grew up watching. I saw him play, and I had that poster that you were just talking about. So now I am also old enough to remember Brett. I mean, George Brett. And so George Brett, if I couldn't do Bo Jackson, I'd do George Brett, because, you know, he was, I mean, in Kansas City, I mean, he was and still is a huge hero. I also am, you know, just old enough to remember him playing and watching him on TV, seeing him at the stadium. So, George Brett has always been a personal hero. I got to meet him for the first time in person, I guess, 3 years ago. And, man, it was such a thrill. You know, I would stand there and I thought, I'm literally tongue-tied. You know, it's like I kind of talk for a living. And yet here I am. I was like, wow, it's so amazing to meet you, you know. So it's pretty cool. But Bo Jackson, amazing.
If you could go back in time, we've had this discussion on the show before, but if you could go back in time and give any athlete perfect health, what would Bo Jackson have accomplished if he doesn't get injured in that game against, I think it was the Bengals in the playoffs, the Raiders, we talked about them being cursed earlier, but I think that injury, even today, they'd be able to fix it if they had the modern medical technology. But that's the one that I go back and think about from my youth. If I could give any athlete perfect health, it would have been Bo Jackson, just to see what he'd be able to accomplish.
Yeah, the sheer athleticism of Jackson, and also the skill. I mean, the guy who combined both of those things with an amazing, incredible work ethic. I remember reading just about his personal story and, just the determination that he had to succeed and to excel. But that kind of raw athletic talent that he then molded into just the incredible accomplishments and record that he had in the time that he played both sports. I mean, it was amazing. He's just a phenomenal, phenomenal athlete and an incredible privilege to get to watch. So I credit Jackson with some of I played football from the time I was just a little guy. And, I wanted to be Bo Jackson. You know, I mean, that was, I also played baseball, you know, for the time. Unfortunately, not quite the talent that Bo had, but the aspiration.
When did you abandon baseball? I know you played, we talked about this before, you played high school football all the way through. Did you play baseball all the way through high school too?
No, I did, and I stopped playing baseball. I played baseball from the time I was six. I'm thinking about that now. My own boys are that age, and we're starting them on baseball.
Yeah, it's awesome. I coach Little League, so that is one of the really cool things to get to do, to go back through with your kids and get to relive kind of your youth fandom through their eyes.
Totally. So I did that until up until high school. So I played baseball until high school, and then I played football all the same years and up through high school. At one point in time, I'd hoped to play football in college. I mean, I loved it. I grew up in a state that's a football crazy state, Missouri, and you know, a small town that was football crazy. My dad played in a small college, played the football. He was a wide receiver, so you know, I always thought, man, I'd love to be able to do that. Then again, not quite the talent level, and we played sports year round. I also swam competitively. I played a little basketball in there, ran a little track and field. I mean, just sports was just a way of life, you know, kind of growing up. That's how my dad grew up. My mom also loved sports. My sister, you know, I've got a younger sister. She loved sports, played sports all the time. She's a great basketball player. So it's just a great part of life and growing up.
We're talking to Senator Josh Hawley. Speaking of sports, do you believe that, for instance, Kansas City Royals that are playing right now, the Braves today have announced they're going back to 100% capacity. Should sports, we were just talking with Mike Coppinger, who's down to cover the Canelo fight that's going on in the Jerry World Stadium down in Dallas. They're going to have over 70,000 people there. The biggest sporting event that's going on since things started to shut down because of COVID. Do you think it's time to allow people the opportunity to go back in to stadiums and be able to watch in sort of normal capacity settings, particularly outdoors?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, in outdoors especially, I think it makes a lot of sense. And here's the thing about the situation we're at now, Clay, with the vaccine widely available, you know, people make the choice to go get it. I just think that if you don't allow folks to go back to normal, I mean, you have all this, we hear a lot now about vaccine hesitancy and all this stuff, and I think part of this is people say, well, hold on, if I go and I get the vaccine but nothing changes for me, I still got to wear the mask, I still can't get together with friends and family at any size, I still can't go to sporting events or else it's really limited capacity. I think people are saying, well, what difference does it make? I think you've got to tell people, listen, we are at the verge of being over. This thing is almost over. We're just about there. You know, we just got to power through here. And we're going to make it. We're going to break the back of this thing, finally, COVID. And I think part of that is we've got to be able to get back to normal and be able to give people a sense of that, hey, we are on the way back here. So, yeah, I think for outdoors, it makes total sense. And maybe, you know, I'm not a doctor, but for indoor stuff, for folks who've been vaccinated, again, I defer to the experts on that. But I just think this idea that we got to keep masking up outdoors, and we got to separate ourselves and be 6 feet or more outdoors, and especially then for folks who've been vaccinated, it strikes me as bizarre.
Amen. We're talking to Senator Josh Hawley from Missouri. You've got a brand new book out, which is the reason you're on here, and I said I've got it in my house, and it honestly is arriving at a really interesting time. It's called The Tyranny of Big Tech. And the story of your book being your story of your book is almost its own book in and of itself. And I'm going to get to that in a minute. But this seems particularly apropos, given that this week we saw Facebook and their sort of oversight council, whatever name you want to give them, reviewing the decision of whether or not it was appropriate to bar Donald Trump from the site. Basically didn't issue any kind of decision. They said, hey, Facebook itself has 6 months to tell us whether or not this suspension is permanent and what their justification is for it. Josh, I've been saying for a while, we have allowed a backdoor Chinese wall on the internet to exist. In other words, our government isn't directly doing it, but the power of Google, Facebook, Twitter, all of these different major companies, Amazon, Apple, we have created in big tech a modern day universe where they can censor and block things just like the Chinese government can. They have the same power, arguably more power than our government does when it comes to the dissemination of ideas and our marketplace of ideas. And I know that's a big part of your book, but why is it important and how would you assess the larger picture here?
Yeah, it's really important. It's incredibly frightening, and you're right. The Facebook decision this week, or non-decision, you know, whatever, it's a fake court. I call it a bogus court. That said, basically what they said is Facebook will just do whatever they want to do for whatever reason they want, and you should just shut up and learn to like it. And the thing that is so frightening about that is that they could do that to anybody. I don't want any one company or any one person in America to have that kind of control over free speech. And to me, this is a speech issue and it's a monopoly issue. These companies are monopolies that got control over speech, over our information, over journalism, over news. They shouldn't have that kind of control. And they've gotten it, I would argue, with the helping hand of government. So my view is we need to break up their monopoly power. I'm a big believer in competition in every sphere, you know, sports, but also in the marketplace. The problem with tech right now, these tech platforms, there's not real competition for them. So my view is we need to break up their monopoly power and get some new competition into the market.
It's such a fascinating question, and I think a lot of Americans feel the way that they know that something is wrong, but they're not really sure what levers need to be pulled to fix it in terms of our social media universe that we have created. So when you say break them up, in an ideal world, if you had the ability to kind of dissect them, I mean, the analogy that I made, I got to go talk in front of Congress back in March, is I'm a history nerd, and it seems to me that we have basically recreated the robber baron era, right? When Standard Oil existed and you had the Rockefellers and the Carnegies, and they were creating this massive amount of wealth in the hands of a tiny, tiny percentage of people, right as sort of America's industry took off. It seems like we've recreated that sort of Gilded Age era, and we broke up a lot of those companies. And as a result, we allowed competition to flourish. Is there the will to do that? Would you agree with that historical analogy?
I do agree with that historical analogy. I think the big tech barons today are the robber barons of this era, and the control they have. I mean, yeah, they've got a gob of money, but also control over our speech, control over our news. And when you talk about breaking them up, I mean, here's what I would do. Take Facebook, for instance. Facebook owns Instagram, of course, and also WhatsApp. It bought both of those companies to try to stifle competition. I think they ought to be spun off. I think you ought to break those up. Google owns YouTube. You know, well, Google went out and bought YouTube to try to make a play in the social media space and also eliminate a potential competitor. I think they should have to spin off YouTube. We could go down the line. Amazon has obviously the dominant e-commerce platform, but also the cloud with their AWS program platform. So I think they ought to have to separate those two things. This is the kind of sort of spinning off, separating, trust busting I think that we ought to do in order to get competition in there, so that if people say, listen, I don't want to be tracked all over the web by Facebook, I don't want them telling me what I can and cannot say to my friends, then there'd be an alternative. You say, okay, well, I'll go over to this other platform. Right now, there are no viable alternatives.
Yeah, and what's even scarier, honestly, and I wrote and talked about this some, and we talked about it on the show, is companies that are trying to compete, they get shut down, like what happened with Parler, right? Whether you agree or disagree with their business plan, some people out there will say, well, you would consent. Like that's what you hear every time. Well, Facebook has the right to do whatever they want. They're a private company. And as you well know, that's not true. Like, private companies are subject to all different sorts of regulations in general, including, like you're saying, antitrust law. But if we wanted to allow the marketplace to flourish, in theory, if Twitter, for instance, is making decisions that you don't like, people out there listening, they should be able to go to an alternative for Twitter. But what happened to Parler in the wake of this shutdown, censorious action going on by so many different companies, was Parler got shut down too. So they literally were not even allowing a competitor to exist.
Yeah, you talk about monopoly power. To see Apple and Amazon and Twitter and Google get together and in the space of about 48 hours just cancel a competitor, I mean, pretty much eliminate them as a viable competitor, is really breathtaking. You know, I mean, now that's power. And these companies have this power and they want to use it. And this is exactly as you say, what we need is to open up space for new companies to come in so people can have a choice. And you can go and make your own decision, make your own choice about what platform you want to be on. The other thing you mentioned, Clay, is about folks often say, the big tech defenders, yeah, you've agreed to this. It's a private company. When you signed up, you agreed to it. Problem with that is you can't enforce the agreement that you supposedly agreed to. Those terms of service where you click yes, you know, yes, you open a Facebook account. If they violate that, if Facebook violates it, you can't sue them. You can't do anything about it because the federal government gives them immunity. Now, no other company gets that kind of thing. No other media platform gets that, but they do. The tech companies do. I think that's wrong. I mean, you want to see some change? Allow people to enforce those terms of service. Allow people to go to court and say, whoa, 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 you violated this agreement we had. That would introduce some change.
No doubt. And also, there's no – I know we talked about the oversight board or the kangaroo court, whatever you want to call it, that Facebook has tried to put together to take away big decisions from Mark Zuckerberg and other prominent executives there and say, oh, no, that's not us. It's, you know, this group. It kind of reminds me of the colleges that, you know, create the NCAA. And then if the NCAA has a rule they don't like, they're like, oh, that's not us. That's an NCAA rule. I'm like, yeah, but you created right. the NCAA. Like, you can't just pretend that you have nothing to do with the larger context here. But you, and the reason why I bring that up is we will post articles on OutKick and Facebook will give us a, you know, this is impermissible, you can't share it, a violation, which is very Orwellian. But one of them, Josh, was for a story. We linked a editorial by a Johns Hopkins doctor who was arguing that we would have a return to normalcy based on vaccination rates and overall infections from COVID by the end of April. And so we shared that article. It's an opinion, and Facebook said this is factually inaccurate. And I said, well, wait a minute. Like, we're appealing, right? But this is an opinion article that we are sharing. It's not supposed to be true or false, because an opinion, you know, is exactly the opposite of a fact, right? You're trying to make an argument one way or the other. There's no way to appeal that decision. And it costs my company massive amounts of money because we rely on an audience being able to see our product on Facebook. It's happening to us. It's happening to companies everywhere. And it happened to you in terms of cancellation because your book, and again, it's out right now. People can go buy it, The Tyranny of Big Tech. They pulled your book contract after January 6th.
Yeah, exactly. And it was really, in many ways, a tech-led effort. It was Twitter. A big Twitter petition and a Twitter storm that led to the former publisher, the publisher that actually commissioned the book and asked me to write it, to say that, now we're canceling it. We're going to try to cancel Holly. We're going to try to shut this speech down. And this gets back to me, the core issue here for those of us who believe in the First Amendment, which I think is the overwhelming majority of Americans. You may not like somebody else's speech. You know, the First Amendment is the right to be wrong.
Yes.
You know, this is what when I used to defend folks in court as a First Amendment lawyer, I mean, did I agree with my clients all the time? No, I mean, but that's not the equation. The equation is, the question is, can I go out and protect speech even if I disagree with it? And we've gotten to the point in this country, my book is an example of this, where a segment of our country, I think, you know, sort of the wokies, are increasingly saying, if we don't agree with your speech and like it, you shouldn't be able to speak at all anywhere. We want you silenced. We want you deplatformed. And they did try to do that with me. They failed because we still have independent publishers and independent news sources in this country, which is why what you're doing is so important, Clay, is to provide that independent voice and just a place where, you know, people from different political perspectives can come and say, wow, here's some independence. But the book, you know, is out, which is outstanding and able to get it out there. And I just refuse to be canceled. But it is scary that this woke contingent in this country wants to try and shut down all speech that they disagree with and to impose their own views across, you know, politics, sports, journalism, all of it. I haven't seen anything like it in my lifetime. And I just think those of us who believe in the First Amendment have got to stand up and say, we believe in the right to be wrong. We believe in free speech, and we're going to fight for it.
Amen. I always say there's a big difference, Senator, between saying, I disagree with you and making an argument on the contrary, which is what the foundation of American democracy is all about. And I disagree with you, and you don't have the right to your opinion, and you should be canceled for even having that opinion. And unfortunately, that's where a very illiberal subset of the American population has taken this discourse. I'm reading the book. It's fantastic. The book is The Tyranny of Big Tech by Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri. Enjoy the Aaron Rodgers drama. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks so much for having me, Clay.
This is OutKick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Hey, it's Ben, host of the Fifth Hour with Ben Maller, along with my trusty sidekick, David Gascon. Would mean a lot to have you join us on our weekly auditory journey. You're asking, what in God's name is the Fifth Hour? I'll tell you, it's a spinoff of the Ben Maller Show, a cult hit overnights on FSR. Why should you listen? Picture, if you will, a world where we chat with captains of industry in media, sports, and more every week, explore some amazing facts about human nature and more. Listen to the Fifth Hour with Ben Maller on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Eddie, what jersey would you have picked if you were given the option that I had to have? Pick somebody. We're doing throwback Fox Bet Live segment during the course of today's show. What 80s or 90s era star would you have wanted to wear a jersey of?
Well, I know you've been talking about Bo Jackson recently. That's a pretty good one to go for.
Yes.
It could be baseball. It could be football, whatever. Maybe an Auburn jersey even I would go for.
Oh, yeah. The Auburn Bo Jackson baseball jersey is a pretty cool one. I just love that Kansas City Royals, like that baby blue that they had back in the day, the 80s, late 80s look of the Kansas City Royals. I thought that's an awesome jersey. So that's the one I went with. What about you, Danny G? Who would you have gone with?
I would go with a guy who meant a lot to the city of Los Angeles. A classic number two jersey, our favorite pasta-eating manager, the late, great Tommy Lasorda.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
I would rock a number two.
That's an awesome idea. What about you, Eddie, Roberto? I'm crossed up because usually I would go. Yeah, usually I would go to Dub, but Dub is wherever he is. He's traveling all over the country. So who would you go with, Roberto?
I'll go with jerseys that I have. I got my Fernando.
Oh, Fernando, yeah.
1981 Dodgers jersey.
Fernando Mania.
That's right.
Fernando Valenzuela. It's going to be fun. I mean, that jersey, I'm going to give it to one of my boys afterwards. I'm not a jersey guy, but the old throwback jerseys are obviously super popular in many ways. So going back through the old baseball cards and looking at them and trying to decide which one to go with. And I remember that Kansas City Royals jersey so vividly, the Bo Jackson number 16. And I don't think there's any doubt that if you could go back in time and pick any athlete to have 100% health, how would we talk about Bo Jackson if he had been able to play to 35 or 36 years old like most guys are able to, maybe longer in Major League Baseball, given what a supreme, unbelievable athlete he was? That would be incredible to think about what he would have been able to accomplish. But it's almost like he's this meteoric, unicorn-like figure who we can all project would have been even more electric and exhilarating than he was already. I mean, it's just wild. It's unfortunate, but also we're fortunate that we got to see him for as long as we did, because I'm not sure there's been anybody still since who is anywhere near what he was capable of in terms of performance. I appreciate all of you hanging out with us. We've had a wild week. Great news for OutKick. Great news for this program. Thanks to all the guys who help out on this show. We aren't changing. Should be an awful lot of fun going forward, just continuing to do what we are doing. Encourage you to check out the podcast. Search out on iTunes, on Spotify, on Google Play, on all the different places where you can grab this podcast. Also got a ton of you responding. We're on Sirius XM channel 83 for the first half of the show, but channel 218 on Sirius, channel 202 on XM, and streaming on channel 992 on the Sirius XM app for anybody out there that is interested in tracking us down. And thanks to the 300 plus AM/FM affiliates that we have in all 50 states. We have a great time every single day, and we appreciate you guys coming and hanging out with us. We'll be back same bat time, same bat channel on the Monday edition of the program. I hope all of you have fantastic weekends. Thanks again for your support of OutKick, and we will be back hanging out with you on Monday. Have great weekends on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of OutKick, the coverage with Clay Travis, weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.